Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us or send in a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, you could visit our website, which is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about making judgments. And you know, we all do that, of course, because we're human and we're thinking about what's going on and we're thinking about the participants and we're making judgments about, well, what should be done and what other people are doing. And, well, that's a negotiation skill too now, isn't it? Now we're going to start out with, as we usually do, kind of a definition of what we mean within this context of making a judgment. So what does it mean to make a judgment within the context of a seminar, a workshop, a lecture, an alternative dispute resolution session, a mediation, a negotiation, whatever it is that we're doing that involves a group of participants that has to reach a successful outcome, that has to reach a negotiated outcome. So what does it mean? What are we talking about when it means to make a judgment? Oh, we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. I see we have lots of participants, lots of people interested. Yes, thank you for being here. Lisa says that making a judgment is to look at the situation and form an opinion. That's an excellent base definition. Thank you. To look at the situation and form an opinion. And that's what a judgment is, isn't it? It's our opinion about something. Mm-hmm, yeah. Shakir says is to have a personal and private opinion. And he writes private in big letters, a personal and private opinion. That, too, is we should keep our judgments and our opinions to ourselves, I think, when it's a personal judgment like that. What we think about the issues is, of course, not private. We talk about that. We negotiate it. But what we think about the people, Shakir is probably right. We should probably keep that to ourselves. It may be a personal and private opinion. Yeah, it's not something that you broadcast because, well, first of all, it changes, probably. And second of all, that's not necessarily to be broadcast amongst everyone, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Adele says it is to have a personal opinion about the individual participants that influences your responses. Well, now we're getting somewhere. We have to look at the situation and form an opinion, Lisa, and then Shakir said to have a personal and private opinion. Good point. And Del says it's to have a personal opinion about the individual participants that influences your responses. And that's what we need to think about, whether or not we're being influenced and how we're being influenced by the judgments that we have made about the individuals, about the issues, about the process itself, maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We need to know how we're being influenced and whether or not, and that's the topic this time, whether or not it's a bias, whether we have been influenced fairly, whether the influence is reasonable and reliable. Because that's the ticket. We are, of course, always interested in being fair because we are the good example for the group. We're the leader, usually. And we are the person that everyone follows. And if we are biased or unfair in some way, well, how can we expect our participants to be any better than we are? You see, we have to be the good example. We have to show that this is the right way to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do we form these judgments? Let's talk about that for a minute. How do we, people are asking, well, how, in order to be unbiased and reliable, how do you form your judgment that way? Because an opinion, well, a private opinion, for example, is sometimes, we have to think about whether or not we have a bias one way or another, but it influences our responses. So let's think about it. How do we form our judgments and opinions? What do we take into account? Mm-hmm. Thank you for all of your participation. Lots of people. Thank you. Nara and a lot of other people are saying that we form the judgments and opinions through experience in similar situations. Through experience. And the more experienced we are, of course, we talked about this on prior shows too, the more we kind of have, well, kind of a little bit of a preconceived notion, I think. Because we've done it so many times, right? It's kind of inevitable. You bring your experience into the room. So we form our judgments and opinions through experience in similar situations. And that's when you have to be careful about being biased too, because you have to think, well, just because it happened last time and a few years ago, this is not the same situation, it's just similar. Let's not prejudge it, right? Let's not know what we're going to do before we do it, before we see it. Mm-hmm. So, through experience in similar situations. You know, a lot of people are asking how to get experience. A lot of you don't have so much experience in doing this. And how to gain some experience help, so to speak, because a lot of judgment is based on experience. And thank you. Quite a few people are replying to that question. Fantabulous. And yes, the way to get experience before you're really hired, before you're really the leader, before you're really settled in and people have faith in you and like that, when you're first starting out or when you're first starting out in a different kind of an area, a lot of people are saying to volunteer, and that is the answer that I would give too. There's lots of organizations that give pro bono help, that give free help to people, and a lot of organizations that will allow you to sit in. Even it might even be a public hearing. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with a public hearing. You're the public. Go sit in on it. When I go, I always like to, I actually still do it. I still do it if I have time because I find it interesting even to hear people speak, to hear people give a seminar or a lecture. I like to watch them and see if I can learn something about my style. Yeah. And about what they did and how they used technology, for example. I still like to do that, and I have a lot of experience. I've got 30 years of experience. So it's still interesting to see how other people do it. And when you're new, I would say volunteer. Be an intern, if that's possible, to really shadow someone with more experience. Mm-hmm. To join groups where someone is leading a negotiation. Be a participant because you'll learn all the way around. You'll learn from what your leader is doing, whether you like it or not, because sometimes you go, well, I don't think I would do it that way. That's all right. That's learning too, isn't it? And join in the discussion, in the negotiation. Join with issues that you're interested in. There's lots of groups that are always civic-minded, and they're doing something that has to do with a change that you'd like to see. Yeah. I mean, don't just join because you want to practice. Join because you really want to make a change in the world. There's lots of changes that we'd all like to do. Take some time and join. It's interesting from both perspectives. I participate in quite a few charitable, well, all right, by now I'm kind of the leader because people ask me to and they know that I have the capacity to do so. But I've always been interested in, like, civic groups and other groups that are making a change in the world, research groups. Yeah. It's interesting to do it because you see the process at work. You know, it's different than when you discuss it or when you read about it, because the process at work is, yeah, people are saying convoluted and messy. I suppose that's true, because it goes in different ways and the leader has to keep it on path. It's like a dance, right? So it has to, I think it's terribly interesting to see it from all sides. And being a participant is the best way to get experience, really, because you can, well, we're talking about making judgments, right? You can make a judgment about your experience, about how the leader handled it and what you would have done differently or what you really admired. You know, I let people shadow me all the time. I think it's a real learning experience. And if they've got some sort of a group that they need to lead, that they are forming, that they're doing, I say, well, yeah, come in, if the other participants allow it, but come to one of my workshops, one of my seminars. Come and listen and participate, and you'll see the process at work. So that's a real good way to gain experience, is to do it. Yeah, researching, it's fine. Yeah, there's nothing, a lot of people are saying there's books on it and like that. This is true, and you can watch videos, and YouTube exists and like that, and that's all very interesting. But there's nothing like actually sitting there and being a part of the process to understand it. You know, this is a really, George is giving a really good analogy. And then we're going to get back to making judgments. But the reason that we're talking about experience is that's a very good way to understand how to make a judgment. Because you've seen it before, because you've been a participant, because you've done it before. Uh-huh. And George is making a really good analogy. You can read about driving a car. You can research it. You can read in the United States, there's a bunch of rules that you have to memorize because you have to take a test. It's called Rules of the Road. I know, isn't that silly? But it's descriptive. And it's all the traffic signs and what to do if there's a red light and a green. You know what I mean. It's the process. And then you have to, they tell you rules about the requirements, the law, and I don't know, driving drunk, and stuff like that. But it's a whole book, and you'd go and you take a multiple choice test before you can get a learner's permit, I think it is, before you can get that. But sometimes before you get a driver's license when you move states too. But anyway, so there's rules about driving, right? And you can watch a bunch of videos, like YouTube videos, about how to drive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do that, and people tell you about it and like that. But you don't really know how to drive until you get behind the wheel and you experience it and kind of how, you know, you understand what I'm saying, how to kind of move the wheel just a little bit to keep in the line and like that. You know, it's different. It's got a feel to it. And that's how the process of negotiation and mediation is. It's not the same to read about it or to watch people do it. You have to sit there and really experience it, because then you see all the side issues and the comments and stuff and the emails that go up and back and really the dynamic of how it's done. Yeah. So anyway, so that's my pitch for go and get experience. It's easy enough to do. People would love for you to volunteer your time and effort and intelligence and skills. Yeah. Yeah, not everybody makes you bring food. It's kind of like, yeah, will they love that I bring a recipe? Yeah, fantabulous. So, sorry, took a little sip of water there. So how do we form judgments and opinions besides experience? Mm-hmm. You know, all of these are kind of tied to experience in a sense, because you're sitting there, right? Burt says by analyzing the participant responses to issues and each other. By analyzing the participant responses to issues and each other. You know, that's a very good point. You make a judgment, form an opinion, and have an influenced response by the way the participants are interacting. The way they respond to the issues, which you expect because people have an opinion about the issues and they have an idea of what needs to be done, or they wouldn't be there, right? That's the reason that they're there, that they've really come, that they're giving their time and their skills and their effort. But also, how they interact with each other is a judgment idea, isn't it? How they interact, are they civil, or do you have to keep enforcing it? Mm-hmm. Are they reasonable? Are they willing to take the turns without having enforcement? You know, sometimes we're the referee, I swear, because we need to keep the participants from bullying one another in some way. Yeah, and it's kind of, well, gee, I'm the leader, but wow, you guys are acting like two-year-olds. Yeah, by analyzing the participant responses to issues and each other. And so you make a judgment about the people and how they're going to act next time and what you're going to need to do. Are you going to need to actually separate them and have seating assignments like little children? Sometimes, yeah, depends on the group. You know, I'm going to say it depends again because it does. It depends on the group, on the participants, yeah. How else do we make a judgment? How do we form this? Janika says, by having dealt with the participants in the past. Yeah, what a good idea. Sometimes, and I have this all the time because I have a lot of repeat clients. They get on the client list and then they never leave, which is good. But I've got a lot of people, and a lot of times I know some of the participants. And I have formed a judgment and an opinion about them, haven't I? But you have to be careful because sometimes people do change or they've changed their opinion. You know, if you think back, I know a lot of you are youngish, but we've got kind of a diverse age group. And thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. If you guys think back, even if you're young, if you think back to what your opinions were 10 years ago, right? They're probably different now because life has happened to you. And they're either not the same opinions. They might be stronger. People are saying that their beliefs are stronger. Yep, that happens too. They get reinforced. But you've changed over the time period, right? People change, and you have to, and they have different opinions about different things, and you can't kind of come in with, I know what this person's going to do and what they're going to say, because I've dealt with them in the past on this type of issue. Well, it's not the same issue, and you got to remember to listen, right? Having dealt with the participants in the past. It's a real good point, though, because that's how we form a judgment and an opinion. And our judgment might be, my goodness, you've changed your opinion. But that's personal and private, as Shakir says, right? Private. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now we have lots of participation. Thank you so much. And I'm going to kind of do this generally because we have lots of agreement and lots of people saying basically the same thing, and all of you are so smart, and it's all absolutely true. And I'm going to call this asking the opinion of others with experience in similar situations. How do we make judgments and opinions? By asking somebody else. By kind of asking others who have been in a similar situation what they think of this. What's their opinion on it? How should we proceed? A lot of times I ask that. I'm not adverse to asking for advice. I like people to tell me how to proceed. I'm not a genius, and I don't always know. And I've got lots of experience. So But I'm going to call this kind of grouping, and this is from many of you, and thank you all for your participation. Hang on, what's that? There we go. Drink a little bit of water there. Okay. So by asking the opinion of others, a lot of people are saying experts. You go and you ask somebody who's an expert in the field what their opinion is, what their judgment is. I like to do it especially if there's a technical issue involved. Not necessarily technology, but even something to do with an area of the law that's not my expertise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like to ask someone else's opinion, what they think of it, whether or not we're on the right path, whether it's viable. You know, sometimes we get into an issue with a group, and it's not something that we expected. You know, that's why I'm telling you, the process is not neat and clean and goes in a straightforward manner. It kind of has fits and starts oftentimes, especially if it's complex. And we run into an issue that's kind of technical and has a rules, especially with the government. I like to ask someone who's dealt with that before, an expert, somebody in my field, usually an attorney, and I ask them, what do you think of that? Is that, are we headed in the right direction? Is that how we should go? Or do you have an opinion that maybe it would be easier, more straightforward, more successful to do something else, to take a different tact? Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good point, too. Yeah, I do this. People are saying that not only do you ask somebody that, but you ask if they know anyone who would be good to deal with, for example, a government official or somebody. Who would be the person in charge, I ask a lot of times. Who do you know who would be the person to take this to give us an opinion, to be in charge, to move it forward? Because, you know, I happen to be in the United States, and this is, of course, a global show. But everywhere, I think, government is... Yeah, people are saying government is government. Yeah, government is government. There's all kinds of rules and regulations, and there's somebody who can move it forward and somebody who is kind of a clerk. You know what I mean? They're very nice and like that, but they don't know the answer, and they don't have any power to really get an answer or create an answer. And talking with them might be not as efficient as dealing with someone who actually knows something. How's that for being polite? You like it? Yeah. But you know what I mean. It's so you need an expert, somebody to tell you, well, this is the person who'd be better to deal with, right? Yeah. So getting an expert opinion. A lot of people are saying that you solicit the opinion of someone else who has dealt with the specific individuals. Now, what do you think of this person? When you dealt with them before, what was your opinion? Mm-hmm. What kind of a judgment did you make? Now, we can't take that completely, right? We have to make our own judgments and opinions. But a lot of times it's interesting. Yeah, somebody else who has successfully dealt with the same issues. Mm-hmm. That's kind of an expert in its way, yeah. Someone dealt with the same issues. A lot of people saying so, there's groups, for example, that have dealt with the same issues. Let's contact them. Let's see what they did. Let's see what they did to get to their success. And you know, we've talked about this before on prior shows. By the way, last five archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of them archived on the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. But it's times organizations don't necessarily make it, or groups. They fail. And you know what? A lot of times it is more interesting to see the failure than even the success, because you know what not to do. Yeah, there's no sense in starting from the very beginning if someone's gotten halfway there and then they took a wrong turn. Let's see what it was that happened. Let's try not to do that. And let's go forward to success. Yeah, sometimes failure is more interesting than success. Not our failure, of course. Sometimes that happens too, and you have to analyze it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are saying that you look to the opinion of others who have dealt with the organizations represented by the individual. And you will see that quite a bit. Sometimes the individual participants are not there as themselves, so to speak. They are representatives of a viewpoint of an organization. And that is interesting to see also because it tells us what their core belief will be. And someone else who's dealt with the organization might be interesting to talk to. This is true too. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. A lot of people are saying organizations are also easy to research. They've got websites. Mm-hmm. And you can look them up and see what they say and what articles have been written about them and like that. You know, going to others outside the actual process and asking judgments might even involve, in fact, oftentimes it does, using the Internet, really, to research what people have said. A lot of times people have posted something about the issues because they're terribly interested in them. A lot of people have blogs. That would really tell you something to be able to look at it. But a lot of times they have research, they have articles, and they've given opinions, and there have been interviews and like that, all interesting to look at. It gives you a foundation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are asking if you do this research before the process starts or after, during the process. Judgments are always with us. You know, you make them constantly as the process goes along, really. But it is, if you know who the participants are going to be, you might think about them ahead of time or early in the process to see what the dynamic is going to, well, what the dynamic might look like. See, I almost said is going to be, right? And that would be a preconceived notion on my part because I would say, well, I have experience with this and this is what these people usually do. And that's not fair, right? That is having an opinion before I see it. Well, what kind of a thing is that? That's no good. Yeah. So you have to be careful of doing that and not do what I just did. Mm-hmm. So what kind of judgments do we make? We've talked about what judgments are and how we form them. But what kind of judgments do we make? What are we talking about here? What kind of judgments do we commonly make with the group? We have consensus, I think. And it's so true. Besides, you know, a lot of people are saying that the main judgment that is made is truthfulness. Is it true? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it, can these people be trusted? Is what they say true? Or are they just, well, you know, I don't like to use the word lying, but, well, all right, are they just lying for their own purposes or to make the progress go in a certain way that is not advantageous, but they're kind of trying to persuade everybody that it is? That makes sense? They're outright lying, yeah. So that's one of the core things that we judge, whether or not these people are being truthful, whether or not it's true what they've said. And, yeah, okay, I'm going to this kind of goes to sincerity. Crystal and other people are saying that truth is not necessarily cut and dried if it's not just the facts. And even the facts sometimes have different interpretations. Yeah, it's whether they're being truthful within their belief. It's kind of like, well, are they just lying? Or is what I perceived as the not being truthful what they perceive as being truthful? See, that's an interesting thing to think about when you're making a judgment and an opinion. I perceive that that's ridiculous. It's not true. Do they perceive that too? And they're just faking us out? Or they actually think it's true? Are they being truthful in their own heart, so to speak? Interesting point. Okay, let's get back to truthfulness in a second, because we're going to talk about, you know, I guess we're going to do it now because we're having a discussion. You know, this show is, of course, I always say it's organic, and it goes however it is that our discussion goes. So wonderful. Facts are something that you verify, right? Yeah, actual facts. I went and did this. This is the amount of money. You know, actual facts. That goes to truthfulness. True belief goes to kind of sincerity. And is sincerity of belief the same as truth? Well, we're not philosophy students here. I have no idea. But you need to make a judgment about whether it's the truth from the perspective of the person saying it. Because then they're not liars, and you don't make a judgment as to their character. You make a judgment as to their beliefs, right? And that's something completely different. You can be a person of very fine and truthful character, but have beliefs that other participants don't think are true, right? Yeah, we all know this. There's cultural beliefs and religious ones and all kinds of beliefs that we have that we deem to be true. Others might not think they're true, but that doesn't mean we're lying. We think they're true. Got that? Yeah. So that's the difference between truth and sincerity of belief, right? And those are things that we make judgments about, and they're fundamental. Fundamental with the way that we deal with the participants is the key to it. And sometimes shown actual facts, beliefs will change. I've seen this happen many times, not usually real core beliefs like cultural or religious or long held, really. But beliefs in what should be done to get a good outcome. People come in with an opinion, a belief. That will change during the process as we look at the facts, right? Yeah, so that's, you have to make a distinction between what is important to the outcome, right? What can be changed and modified and is important to the outcome. And what you may think it's the weirdest thing you've ever heard. If it's not, that's just personal belief. It's a personal truth. And really, why would you bother to try to change it? Because it has nothing to do with our outcome. You have to just take that into an account when dealing with a person. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's sincerity of belief versus truthfulness. And we do make judgments about that. Mm-hmm. What other kinds of judgments do we make? Whether or not people will follow through is a good point Thomas is making. Whether they'll do what it is that they've said that they'll do. Mm-hmm. That's a good point, whether or not they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a kind of an interesting point. I want to call it which participants will form cliques. We've actually talked about cliques before. When you have, yes, C-L-I-Q-U-E-S, where you have kind of subgroups that are forming that aren't, not committees or something, but just people are kind of getting together and forming their own little exclusionary group. Mm-hmm. And that's a judgment, too, whether or not you're going to need to, I don't like to say keep these people away from each other, but prevent them from derailing the process by only talking to each other, right? And Odin says that happens when they share a preconceived notion. When people come in sharing a preconceived notion because of a belief, for example, they can form kind of a little exclusionary group that only talks to each other. You have to make a judgment whether they're going to do that and take action. I must confess that this is the type of thing that I'm afraid that I sometimes use the preconceived notion, because if they come in as a preformed group, so to speak, because they've all got the same idea, I make a judgment that they're going to be kind of forming a clique, and I take action before they do, before I even know if they're going to, if you know what I mean, because I think it's important. And once it forms, it's hard to get rid of. Yes, Steve says that it happens when they share core beliefs such as religion, culture, and ethnicity. And people are saying gender. All right. I don't like to think of the fact that sometimes women only talk to women, but I have seen gender be a factor. And of course, I'm a woman, so it's kind of strange. But I've seen gender be a factor in high-powered meetings where there are very few women and a lot of men who are kind of closing ranks. and it happens. It even happens today. I used to see it somewhat more, but it's kind of a form of bullying. And I do not allow it to occur. That's one of my big things, is not to allow some type of group, some type of participant from kind of bullying, being uncivil to the others. I'm going to say, people are saying the civility rules, and we talk about them a lot on this show. And yes, I'm very big on enforcing the civility rules. But have you ever been in a group where one type of participant, I don't like to say what kind because that's a preconceived notion and judgment on my part, right? But let's use as an example, although this is just being used as an example, that a fairly high up administrative person is very polite. In fact, actually unctuous, right? But it's really an uncivil form of bullying because they're being condescending. Yeah? So it's not necessarily outright uncivility. Yeah, people are saying it's too much civility. Yeah, it's got that tone to it, and they're using it to bully the other participants. Ooh, I don't cotton to that at all. No, this is where the leader steps in and says, you've had your turn. It's now someone else to have a turn. Yeah, and like that. And you talk to them in private and explain that we are all equals in this particular room. Don't care what you are on the outside. When you enter my group as a participant, we are equals in importance, even if you're an expert. Because experts are wonderful and interesting, but they're not better than the rest of the group. Yeah, I guess I'm sensitive about that. So, we don't want to have a form click. And, you know, a lot of people, Helen and others, are saying that we make a judgment about the participants when it looks like they formed a relationship that extends beyond the group. And I'm not talking really about a love relationship. You know what I mean? Although that happens sometimes too. It's first, I should charge extra for marriage counseling, because occasionally people actually meet in a group that I'm facilitating. Kind of cool. But a lot of times it's not even a romantic type relationship. They just have common interests. And then they start going together, they become friends, and they meet and stuff outside the group and outside the parameters of the process, but they still talk about it, right? And so they need to bring their information back to the group. So Now that we've talked about judgments and about type of judgments we make and how we make them, how do we determine that our judgments are unbiased? That's really the key to this. Because you have to, everybody makes judgments, but they have to be good judgments. They have to be opinions that are unbiased, that are reasonable, and that take into, that are reasonable concerning the individuals in the group and the group dynamic, so that you can go forward and do something practical and keep the process in a forward momentum, right? Right, so we can get to a successful conclusion. This is not supposed to take forever. The process is supposed to come to a successful conclusion, right? Right. So how do we know, how can we make sure that we are being unbiased, besides the fact that we're exceptional people, which we can all agree on? Mm-hmm. We can have a bias that we're good, that we are good at our job, that we are exceptional. I think we all are. Mm-hmm. Raina and others are saying that the way to know that your judgments are unbiased is to base them on facts, not opinions. If that's possible, that's a real good idea. Sometimes the judgments are about people, and we have to think that's still facts, though, isn't it, Raina and others? Yeah. The facts of what they have done, what they have said, and how they interact with others. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are facts that are kind of not black and white, though. You know, there's technical facts. How much is it? That's a fact. But that's a real foundational. And then there's facts that get interpreted as facts. Yeah, so you have to think about whether or not you're interpreting the situation, or it's actually a fact, not an opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, Anne and others are saying that you can see that your judgments are unbiased if you discuss them with a trusted member of the group and see if they agree. Discuss them with someone. Discuss your opinions and judgments. See if someone else thinks they're reasonable and if they agree with you. Or if they really go, oh, I don't think so. Don't think that's what they meant, for example. Because sometimes people take offense or they have an interpretation of what was said. And I don't think that's what was meant. I don't think that's what was said. You know, they took an underlying meaning. And I'm like, well, I really don't think so. I don't think that's what they were saying when they brought that up, you see? And so that's an interpretation. And that's a real good point, to discuss with somebody else to see if they think so too. And if they don't, why not? And maybe you should rethink it. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Michael and others are saying, don't rely on your first impression. Revisit the judgment. That's a good point. I like to rethink the whole thing on a regular basis. I really do. I sit down with quiet time and I think about it. And I am a note taker, but not a real detailed note taker. I only take down the facts that need to be and what assignments people have, because I like to think about it. I like to think of it. You know how the expression, look at it with fresh eyes? Kind of step back and think about how far we've come and what the dynamic of the group is, and look at it with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. People are saying, and thank you for all of your participation, Charles and others, that they actually invite outsiders to sit in with the group, like a friend or someone who has seen these types of groups before, and just as a visitor, and then give a private opinion later as to what the dynamic is. Sometimes you're a little close. And if the group will allow it, that's not a bad idea, to have someone come and judge the dynamic of the group more than the actual facts being presented. Mm-hmm. I don't usually, but I think it's a real good idea. I can see that there's a purpose for it, especially while you're still getting some experience. If the group is turning a little bit difficult or it's not or refusing to budge or something, so I think maybe that would be a good thing. Call someone in with a little more experience. Just call them in as a friend. Just have them, you know, come eat. I don't know. But it just kind of get the feel of it and then give you an opinion what should be done. Mm-hmm. Charles and others are saying you need to be open-minded and accept when you are wrong. Sometimes I make a wrong judgment. So we all do. I've got an opinion. I've made a judgment. And as it goes along, I go, you know, that's not right. Let's think about this. That's why you have to go look at it with new eyes. You have to really think about it and step back. Because sometimes we get a little bit, even though we're oftentimes the third party impartial, we form opinions and judgments about the process and about the people. And you got to step back and see if that's true. And if it's a negative judgment, how to change it, how to change the group dynamic. Very important. Emma and others are saying to avoid preconceived notions because every situation is different. Yeah, avoid preconceived notions because every situation is different. And boy, they sure are. That's really the truth. You can never say, look, it's the same thing. I've seen it 100 times before, and I'm going to just do it this way. Oh, no. They're never the same, and that's why at the beginning of the show we talked about gaining experience through doing and not just through viewing it, to reading it or to look at somebody else doing it, to really sit there. You'd be surprised. Groups have a real – the group itself has a real personality, which is what the dynamic is. The atmosphere of the group is the dynamic, yeah. People asking what a group dynamic is. It's the feel of the group, how the people relate to each other, how willing they are to participate. It's the whole atmosphere, which is why we try to create a convivial one. That's one of the reasons for the idea of the food, of having a time out, a break, when we all get together and eat together, and each of us has brought something that we can talk about. And that's really the key reason for it is it's a tool. I say this all the time. The food is really a tool to increase the group dynamic, to get us talking to each other, to make a more convivial atmosphere. Because it's terribly important. The dynamic makes a big difference, and it'll make a big difference if the process is taking a while. You don't want people to get disgusted and leave. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Dalmira has an expression that I think is a really good one, and I think all cultures have this expression just stated in different little ways. And I know this it's kind of an Americanism, but I know this is an international show. But everybody's got this idea. Dalmira says that the idea is not to let the past rule the future, right? Your past discussions, your preconceived notions, you're dealing with these specific people, this type of a situation. You can't let the past rule the future. Got to start fresh and get your own judgments about this group, these people, this issue, this situation, this process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Hasin says it's very important to recognize that the individuals are not the organization. Recognize that the individuals are not the organization. You need to look past the affiliations and be open-minded and unbiased when dealing with the individuals. You need to look past the affiliations and be open-minded and unbiased when dealing with the individuals. I think that's true. A lot of times, in fact, I know it's true. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's a real good point. A lot of times people are put into a little box because they come from an organization or they are a member of an organization, like a religion or an ethnic group or something like that. And people go, oh, I know what you're going to say. People like you. You know, that kind of a thing. No, you got to look past it. And that's why we do for lack of a better word, the kind of networking, pardon me, where we get to know each other, where we get to talk and to eat. Brody says that the better you get to know people, the more valid the judgments will be. The better you get to know people, the more valid the judgments will be. Good point. I can make an outside judgment that's completely off track because I don't know anything about the individuals. And that's the key to it. You have to get to know about the individuals. And that's why we do the potluck. What we do, we have food in the room. Because when we need a break, we need a time out, we need a reception, yeah, before or after. I like to hold my receptions both ways. Yeah, we don't just come and sit down and start. We have a little something. We all get together. We have a little bit of time when people can come because, you know, traffic and parking and everything. And then afterwards, we have still got some food and some reception and maybe glass of wine, and we talk about it in an informal manner, and then we talk about stuff that's not going to piss us off, and like that, it's all good. Yeah, and that's the purpose of having the food. And now I'm going to say something. Oh, my goodness, we're starting to run out of time. It's going to be such a wonderful discussion. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. I'm going to say what I always say every show. And I say it every show because it's so important. When you're going to have food, you need to take a survey amongst your participants and make sure about allergies, food prohibitions, and religious restrictions on food. You don't want somebody to not have a good time because they can't participate or it makes them sick or whatever. No. And you of course, tell everybody about your survey results so that no one brings something that violates it. Also, you will ask people to please label their food, not what it's called, meatloaf, no, about what is in it, a list of the ingredients, so that I can run my eye down them and I can see if there's something in it that I can't eat or I'm not sure of. That happens to me all the time. And also, I think that the host should have a little bit of extra food, what I call a safe recipe, something that we've taken the survey, everybody can eat, and in case people bring other people or whatever, the ingredients are not too many, and my participants would have eaten them before, right? That's a safe recipe. Now that I've talked about a safe recipe, I can see that we have very little time left. I think we have time for one. And I'm going to do the adventure recipe, which is really not all that adventurous, I must admit this time, because it is a little bit less ingredients and less talking about it. And we've got like 4 minutes. I think I can do this. Should I talk fast? Okay, so that's the eggplant and tomato bake. Very delicious. It is basically vegetarian. In fact, it is vegetarian, which is usually a safe recipe, right? But it has wine in it. And people argue about whether the alcohol cooks off in wine and therefore it's not really wine. But if somebody has a prohibition to alcohol, why pester them? So this is my adventure recipe. You could substitute vegetable broth for the wine. It wouldn't be as good, but you could because the wine actually gives it kind of a nice flavoring to it. But you could substitute, but you just need the liquid. Okay, so this is an eggplant and tomato bake. It's actually quite yummy. And if you let it stand for a few minutes after it's come out of the oven, it cuts really nice too. You can bring a really sharp knife to cut it through because the eggplant's a little tough. No, it's not really tough, but it's got a little resistance. Can I say that? So you need a really, really sharp knife, and then you put it to the side so that nobody gets cut. No, we're not that kind of a group. Nobody, but you don't want it to fall off and hurt somebody off the counter. So let's have 2 nice big eggplants, quarter cup of olive oil, 2 nice big onions. You know that I like the onions that are sweet onions, like Vidalia's. I just prefer them, that we're going to chop. We're going to take the eggplants and we're going to slice them into rounds. kind of medium, well, thick ones. I like it to be kind of not very thick. People make 2-inch rounds. Oh, that's too thick, because you won't be able to cut it through. Not mandolin of the really thin, but not thick either. Kind of even rounds. Let's have a teaspoon of ground cinnamon because it's going to be sweet. A cup of white wine. Yeah, white wine. Isn't that fun? Usually people use red in cooking, but this actually tastes better with white, I think. Let's have a can of chopped tomatoes, one of those big ones. It's like a 2-pound can. If you're going to use fresh, you're a finer person than I am, but I'm going to use the can of tomatoes because it's easy for me. 2 garlic cloves crushed. And let's have a half cup of raisins. It's going to be kind of a sweet and savory. It's just delicious. So we're going to preheat the oven to about 300. Because you've got the eggplants into the rounds. Yeah, like a half inch thick, not more. You know, you sprinkle eggplant with salt, let it stand for about half an hour. It gets the water out. Then you rinse them to get the salt off and pat them dry. When you have eggplant, you do that always with eggplant when you cook with it, when you bake with it, because eggplant has water. The salt drains the water out. So you got to do the salt thing where you sprinkle them with the salt. And while they're sitting there for the half hour, let's heat the oil and add the onion and cook it up so that it's nice and soft. We're going to add the cinnamon, and then we turn it around, and then we're going to pour in the wine. We're going to actually bring that to a boil and simmer it for about 10 minutes until it's reduced to like half, well, maybe a little better than half, more like 3/4. We're going to add the tomato and bring it to a boil. The tomato and all the juice and everything, just throw the can of tomatoes in there. And reduce the heat and that, simmer that for another 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, what we're doing is we're kind of making the sauce, essentially speaking. But if you reduce it down each time, all the flavors get in. So yummy. So we've got that all reduced down, another 10 minutes or so, heat it and simmer it. We're going to put in the garlic and the raisins. Another 5 minutes, primarily because those raisins are hard, and you want them to be nice and soft. At least raisins I see are really, those dried raisins, man, they're really hard. They'll plump up, though, if you cook them for another 5 minutes in that really hot liquid. You know, you've got some more oil. Put it in another frying pan. And cook our eggplant until they're brown. We're not going to cover them or anything with breading, but you got to cook them on both sides. It'll take a couple of batches, right? You cook it a few minutes on one side, you flip them over, cook it until they turn brown, you throw them on a plate, maybe a plate with a paper towel on it. That would be kind of a good thing to drain them. And then the next batch like that. So, well, now what we're going to do, we're going to get ourselves a nice pot, a rectangular pot or square one. And we're going to layer the eggplant and the sauce. Eggplant on the bottom, sauce, eggplant sauce, yeah. On the very top, I like to put some cheese because I really like Parmesan cheese on everything, yes. So we're going to this thing is really cooked, right? But the eggplant is still not soft enough, really. So we're going to take this whole thing and we're going to put it in the oven and bake it for about half an hour so that the eggplant is nice and tender. Just yummy. It all incorporates. Let it stand for a few minutes, maybe even 10 minutes. When it first comes out of the oven, first of all, it's viciously hot. You don't want somebody to burn their tongue. And second of all, it will set better. And then you cut it. It's just delicious. And it's pretty, and everybody likes it. And that's my adventure recipe because of the wine. Really, you should use the wine. If people have a real prohibition towards it and they don't think that boiling it like that will help, boiling it and baking it and stuff, save this recipe for another time. Vegetable stock, I've actually tried using vegetable stock. It's not as good. I don't know why, it just isn't. Okay, so, my goodness, our time is up. We did manage to get one recipe in, though. And I thank you all for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, www.recipeforpeacenow. Prior shows, last five archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.